This is the Board of Public Works,
and this we have a number of items, as you can guess, by the overflow crowd. We have Unite Here, who is here. Good to see you all for your quarterly protest, and we will be hearing from you shortly. And we also have every school board in the state that wasn't snowed out of getting here. I understand some of our neighbors from the west might have problems. School for the Deaf will not be here because of ice on I-70. But we're going to start getting through this as expeditiously as possible, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to handle, there's also a wetlands permit issue, a brief revisit, a matter having been remanded back to us for greater clarification. We're always glad to provide greater clarification. And so we're going to go through the regular Board of Public Works docket. We're going to hold off on the school issues. And after we get done with that regular Public Works docket, we're going to take a break for the school issues. Secretary Smith, I don't know if you stay for those or not. Do you, Al? Al, you stay. Well, you all know who stays and who goes. So I'll leave that to the discretion of the people at the head table. I know the Secretary Smith has specifically asked if you had to stay, and the answer is no, you do not have to stay. Anybody have opening comment? Oh, let me say something by way of opening. Our condolences go out to Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown and his mom and his entire family on the passing of their father. I was at the funeral yesterday in New York, and the whole family was there, and Dr. Brown was an outstanding human being, an immigrant from Jamaica, studied and learned, studied for his medical exam, or studied for medicine in the German language, attended a pretty prestigious medical school in Zurich, Switzerland, where he met Anthony's mom, and they raised a wonderful family. He lived to the age of 89. He passed away with all his family around him just last week, and so our condolences go out to Lieutenant Governor Brown. It's always difficult when the big trees fall, and he was such a tremendous force of love in that family and in that world. Saw patients all the way through his life until he started declining in recent weeks. So we send condolences to him and any of us who have been fortunate enough to have parents. I guess at times like these you realize how blessed we have been. So, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, any opening thoughts?
Except that it's moments like this that we remember that we are all children and how difficult it is, really, to see the passing of a generation, whether it's an extraordinarily great person like Dr. Brown or a normal person like me. Another passing, you mentioned protests. I would not want the time to go without the acknowledgement of the passing of one of my heroes, Pete Seeger, who was not only a great musician, but a great spokesman for America and for civil liberties and civil rights in America. There are those of us who think that the nation would be better off if we had more songs. And I am among them.
Me too. I second the motion.
Yeah,
all in favor?
Really, there's nothing like really good music to bring people together, and that's what Pete Seeger, up until his 94th year, could do. And I just want to go on record recognizing the passing of a great man and urging folks who don't know that much about Pete Seeger to go back and read and listen and be inspired. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor and Madam Treasurer. And I couldn't agree with you more about the Lieutenant Governor. Obviously, a lot of people are thinking of him, and including myself. And thank you for making those remarks about his dad. So I don't know what it is about the school construction begathon, but I think it was rescheduled to today. I kind of get the feeling that if we had it the third week in August, it'd be snowing. But I hope everyone manages to get down here safely. I would like to take just a moment to thank my staff and the comptroller's office for the successful start we have had to the tax filing season. As you know, it started 10 days late because of the IRS in Washington, and we started on Friday processing returns. I'm always on tenderhooks on this because it's all technology-based. We process 3 million tax returns, many of them electronically. And I'm delighted to report that since Friday, we've processed almost 250,000, headed towards 300,000 tax filings. These are incredibly important for our citizens because, unlike all the people in this room, these are folks that actually get refunds back from the government. Most of us wait until April 15th to send our returns in, but there are literally hundreds of thousands of Marylanders that count on these tax refunds to pay their bills, and I'm delighted to report that, knock on wood, it is off to a great start and running smoothly. No obligation, frankly, is more fundamental to us than providing fast and effective customer service to the taxpayers who pay our salaries. I have actually asked my 1,100 employees to no longer refer to themselves as state employees. We call ourselves taxpayer employees to remind us at all times of whom we're here to serve. And it's why I've told each of my 1,100 employees that they need to abide by what I call the three R's of taxpayer service: respect, responsiveness, and results. You may not always like the answer when you get hold of us, but you can always expect my agency to get you an answer in a timely manner. That's why the first couple of weeks of tax season is so important to me, particularly in these tough times, economic times. I really appreciate everything my staff is doing on behalf of Maryland taxpayers. Our whole team of programmers, testing personnel, call center representatives working around the clock at times to ensure a smooth process. And I'm deeply appreciative of their ability to come through time and time again. And as I say, I lie awake at night because, hey, I have to run for office. And the public is not particularly charitable. So this is important stuff. There are two people I'd like to thank in particular. Rhea Reed, Director of the Revenue Administration Division, one of the finest managers in all of Maryland state government, and David Hildebrand, Interim Director of the IT Division, brings order out of chaos by rolling up his sleeves, getting the job done through good teamwork is his idea. He is huge on teamwork. And David and Rhea, thank you very much. I don't know whether they're here. They're probably back working. But I would like to give them a pat on the back. They've done a superb job, and we owe them, along with their staffs, a debt of gratitude for the long hours they're put in. If they're listening in on the Internet, could I please ask you just don't mess it up at this point, because it's always a very delicate operation. I would not mention the tax season without urging you all to file electronically. We are the only agency in this country that guarantees a three-day refund if you file electronically.
Wow, say that again. That's a good one.
And you allow us to electronically put your refund in your bank account. Those two things, you get it within 3 days. It's an elite agency.
That's
no one else around the country is able to do it.
That's very good. I think we can all applaud that.
Yeah.
I have not seen that sort of results, delivery, and vision since we implemented the 48-hour pothole guarantee in Baltimore City.
Well,
that's good stuff. How often can you get something turned around in 3 days in the world?
Yeah.
All right, a book from Amazon. But
and we're talking 80% of 3 million tax returns that are filed electronically. I know that's hard to believe. Now, not all of them let us deposit electronically, but, Governor, thank you, and it absolutely is in line with your whole roll up your sleeves, get the job done, and let's move forward and do what the taxpayers want, which is, get the potholes fixed.
Right, and get their checks back to them. That's good.
So
I can see the headline now. in the paper, Mr. Comptroller, tomorrow. It will be IT proficiency delivery, a big IT project, 72-hour tax turnaround. Spectacular success in state government.
Right.
Don't jinx me.
Those are the ones that always. Those are the ones that always make the headlines, right? Those are the ones that make the headlines.
Don't steal my IT guy away from me.
Is this all done in house? It's all done on house. It's probably.
But it's teamwork, as you know, and you've done a great job in getting state government focused on that, and we're just part of the team effort.
Okay. Well, just to add one more perspective as a taxpayer, not only is it more efficient and more cost effective, but it's actually safer for the taxpayers, because I used to wander around with a check in my purse, and you always wonder when you're depositing it, you know, if you're going to lose it or somebody's going to take it. It is a much better way of doing business from the perspective of the individual.
Thank you.
Okay, let's dive into this 7-hour agenda. The items, hold on one second. The item, the wetlands permit, is that on the secretary's agenda? Okay, hold secretary's agenda. The Unite Here is on what? The transportation? Well, what are they on? I did
Department
not hear you.
Of budget and management.
Okay. Hold budget and management agenda. What is the... Is there another one that's at all controversial?
No, because it's a DBM and the Secretary's agenda and two speakers.
Okay, we're going to skip... What is the...
There is an issue I'd like to bring to your attention, Governor, in the Secretary's agenda.
And actually, could I just technically withdraw that agenda from January 22nd to start this meeting off? What I would like to do is withdraw the January 22nd agenda in its entirety. The meeting was canceled due to a snowstorm. I'm going to substitute in its entirety the February 5th agenda.
Right.
And then I can tell you about the Secretary's agenda with the 27 items, but I'll do that later, except for I think the President wants to talk about item 27.
The Treasurer... The Treasurer moves to withdraw the January 22nd agenda item, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. The Comptroller moves to what?
So we're now presenting the regular agenda to you, and then you can do your regular motions.
Okay. All right. So now we already have the regular agenda before,
right,
so you don't need a motion for that. So
you don't need a motion to put the regular agenda on, correct? You have it in front of you now, and you have the whole thing. I don't know if you want me to... go just to item 27?
I would love to do item 27 and get it done with.
Okay. Item 27 on the Secretary's agenda.
If you don't mind. It's the resolution to start the process for the next general obligation bond sale. And it really is just brought to you and to the public for their notice. We are planning on going to the market on March, the Board of Public Works meeting of March 5th. With bonds totaling $750 million to finance capital projects such as schools, community colleges, universities, and hospitals. The first part of it, Series A, $450, will be a competitive institutional tax exempt bond. The second, Series B, $50 million of taxable bonds. These are for things that don't qualify for tax exemption. And first, Series C, up to $250 million refunding tax bonds. Obviously, the number that goes in there depends on the market. And as we approach, we will have a better idea of what the market is telling us about the value of the refunding and how much it is worth putting out on that particular day. The rates have been very favorable so far this year, and we are looking forward to a good sale, which is why we are putting this much up in the first sale. However, as you know, the argument on Capitol Hill about the debt limit is coming up again, and so I would remind you that we do reserve the right to change the timing of the sale And obviously the amount of the refunding, depending on what the markets look like at that time. If everything is smooth and normal, I think we'll probably go ahead with exactly this proposal. If the markets are roiled because of what's going on Capitol Hill, we may stand back and take a look and let them finish their battles. And then go forward. So the question before you would be an approval of going forward with the planning for the March 5th sale. And Amber Teat, who is the debt manager for the state, is standing quietly back there to answer any questions.
And this is item number?
27.
27. Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And now we're the other item on the secretary's agenda was what the contested item.
Yeah, for the entire secretary's agenda of 27 items and 6 emergency reports, we are withdrawing item 2, and that will be the school for the deaf. Dr. Tucker will be at the next meeting for his naming item.
Item 2 is withdrawn.
We're going to hold item 7. That's school construction. We have speaker requests on 2 items. I don't know if you want to go to another agenda or whatever. We have speaker's request on 6, which is the African American Preservation Grant, and item 12, which is the wetland license to which
okay.
we referred.
Let's go to item 6. And item 6, we love hearing from. This is what African American.
And here, and then she has the.
We always love hearing from you. I hope in deference to all the other people here, you guys might be as succinct as you can possibly be.
Absolutely.
I think I speak for the entire board when we tell you we're enthusiastic, we're supportive, but we also have a whole dome full of people today.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm Ann Rains from the Maryland Historical Trust, and I'll take half a second to tell you that as great as our partnerships are in this program with our grantee organizations who always come before you to thank you, our relationship with the Governor's Office of Community Initiatives and the Maryland Commission on African American History and Culture has just been outstanding. And we're looking forward to the grant round that's going to kick off here in a couple of weeks, workshops in March. And without further ado, we are unfortunately missing our representatives from Kennard High School and the Sandy Spring Oddfellows Lodge because of the weather. They've both been here before. You've seen them. They have wonderful projects. They're being funded again this year. And Soderly Plantation, which you're seeing now, does have representatives here today. We have Nancy Easterling, who's the executive director, and Jan Briscoe, who is from the Board of Trustees. Soderly is a wonderful tidewater plantation, a National Historic Landmark, and we're fortunate that it's the only plantation in Maryland that's actually open to the public.
And it's on the banks of the Patuxent, that's what I thought.
All right, so Nancy's ready.
Okay, Nancy,
lay it
on.
Quiz question number 1, Nancy Easterling.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to be able to tell you a little bit about this project. I know we've got a time crunch, so I won't go into it too long, but let me just say that if, for those of you who are not familiar with Soderly, 300 years of history, and in the past few years, we went through a reinterpretation plan, knowing that we needed to make our story more inclusive. That means don't just tell about the people that own the site. Tell about the people that labored the site. And one of our dreams was to have an exhibit that could talk about the laborers on the site. Those who were enslaved is one of our big stories at Soderly. We know it's our obligation to tell the stories that are not always easy to tell. So you don't just tell the easy ones. You have to tell the difficult ones. It's your obligation, your responsibility. Well, we have a historic structure. Excuse me, our corn crib, which dates back to the late 1700s. It traditionally has housed wonderful farm equipment outside of it. That's not what you're seeing up there. That's a plantation house. But this corn crib that's the corn crib.
Okay.
And you can see the historic tools that have been outside of it for years. What we're going to do is this building does need restoration, and so we're going to put some of the money toward restoring the structure. And then both inside and out, we're going to create an exhibit, which we've already started working on, called Our Land, Lives, and Labor. We're starting with the ideas already. We're going to bring to life the stories of those people, the enslaved, the tenant farmers, the 20th century farm workers who lived and worked that site. So often these are stories that aren't told, and they need to be told. This is an exciting exhibit. We can't wait to share it with the public. We hope to have it ready for the summer of 2015. And this is one of the few grants out there that are available to do this kind of project. And it's so critically important for us to make sure that we are as inclusive as we can and that we bring these stories to the forefront. And so we're so appreciative of that. I did want to take one moment to let Jan Briscoe, our Board of Trustee President, take a moment to thank you on behalf of the board as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
As Nancy said, I'm here as president of the Board of Trustees of Soderle, and I did want to assure you that the board is totally committed to not only this project, but many others that serve as an educational resource for our state. This National Historic Landmark in the 1990s was very close to being closed to the public permanently. My father, John Briscoe, you may have known, was president at that time. And
I was going to ask you if you were related to the great John Hanson.
Yes, sir,
Briscoe.
I am. And saw you recently, and thank you.
Yeah, our condolences on
thank
his
you.
Passing.
I appreciate that. But I know he was very grateful for the state support that had been given during his life and appreciative of, he was aware of this grant, too, before he passed. And he was very excited about it. He's, again, we've come so far, this site, but only with the support of the state. And we're very grateful to all of you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And
thank
people
you.
Like and people like John Bohannon and other delegates during these tough times, there were some that said, look, we're going through a recession. We can't afford to preserve history or land right now. But
right.
we never strayed from our obligation to future generations of preserving and passing forward both the land and our history. So thank you for noticing
Absolutely.
That. Thank your friendly neighborhood delegate.
Absolutely. Trust me, we have. Thanks again. So appreciate
thank
it.
You. Thank you, Tony. It's like Spider-Man. Okay, who else we got?
Good morning, all. My name is Joni Jones. I'm the director of the Maryland Commission on African American History and Culture, a unit of the Governor's Office of Community Initiatives. I am joined today by the vice chair of the commission, Linda Marshall. And in the interest of time, we'll just be very brief, and I'll speak for both of us to say that this preservation grant has been, as you have seen and continue to hear, a wonderful endeavor and a great partnership with the Maryland Historical Trust and something that we will work to keep going. So, thank you.
Cool. Thank you. Anything else? All right. Well, the Comptroller moves approval of this item, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. So, item 6 passes unanimously. Thank you. We're going to hold off on item 12. I'm sorry, but we're now going to consider the balance of the secretary's agenda.
Everything except 7, which is school construction, and 12, which is the weapons item.
So we're holding 7 and 12. Any questions on anything else? The comptroller moves approval, seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. So anyone that was here on the secretary's agenda, with the exception of that wetlands revisit and item 7, the school stuff, is free to go now and vacate your seat. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Have a great Wednesday. I don't see many people leaving. All right, we're on now to the budget item. What is the contested budget? I'm sorry, DNR. Sure, real property. What did you got?
Thank you. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Emily Wilson, Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 9 items today. We do have a representative from Delegate Tawana Gaines' office for item 6A, which is the Greenbelt Community Center facility upgrades. Ms. Pam Powers is sitting behind me.
Okay, come on down.
She did tell me she doesn't need to speak, but
okay.
I just wanted to
God bless you. We're
going to
vote for it unanimously. We love Delegate Tawana Gaines. Very responsive and responsible delegate, one of the sharpest and clearest speaking and thinking members of the House of Delegates.
I couldn't agree more.
Okay. Anything on real property? Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. So
thank you.
We now move on to the Department of Budget and Management. And the one agenda we are holding off on that one is?
Item 1.
Item 1, okay. Which is?
This is the item that provides 20 temporary general laborers to support the BWI, Marshall, and the Martin State Airports. They're providing unskilled labor.
All right, we're holding off on item one. Any questions on the balance of the DVM budget? Hearing none. Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We now move on. We'll be coming back tonight here. Just hang in there. Or hang in here. The University System of Maryland.
Morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Jim Sterling for the University System. We have eight items on today's agenda. I'd be happy to address any questions.
Okay. I think we're good on these eight items. I'd like to ask you, Mr. Sterling, could you go back to your hierarchy, to President Lowe and also to the Chancellor, and the Regents for that matter, and I'll write to them too. Help me remember this, Kay Larch. There is nowhere on the University of Maryland College Park campus any recognition of the great Frederick Douglass anywhere. And he is probably one of the most recognized Marylanders in the world. And there's no statue, no bust, no plaque. There are people working on this sort of thing, but I couldn't think of a better use of those sort of foundation, endowment. You know the money that you all never like to tell us about? I think it would be a great use of those funds. Perhaps maybe to commemorate and mark the progress making 8 years of this last administration. Not that I'm soliciting by any means, but I think we need a statue or a bust or some tribute to Frederick Douglass on that campus. We are one. Our cause is one. And we must help each other if we are to succeed, as he said.
Understood. I'll pass that along this afternoon.
Good. Thanks a lot. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to Department of Information Technology.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Greg Urban with the Department of Information Technology. I have seven items for you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
So how are things?
They're going swimmingly.
They're actually doing some great stuff. I was reading about the really positive things we're doing on procurement reform. We had to revisit terms and conditions because we were scaring away all of the best potential IT contractors because of the rigidity and the outdated nature of our procurement, our request for proposals. And so you guys are ahead of the curve on that procurement reform, and I appreciate it and encourage you to make sure you include on the front end of those procurements an open period where the potential vendors, bidders, can pitch to you as to how you can dial up the innovation and the flexibility on the bids as you put them out there. Sometimes just knowing that on the front end, and it would be open for everyone.
Sure, absolutely.
And whatever we need to do, we were talking about this together, whatever we need to do to make it clear that that sort of conversation up front, provided it's open on the record and all of that, is encouraged and permissible. I'd encourage you to do. You guys are doing great on that.
Thank you.
And also Elliot Schlanger and what he's doing on the cybersecurity and the IT, what do you call it, IT hygiene or awareness?
The awareness program.
Threat awareness. Really, really good stuff. I mean, what we're doing as a state, and I would encourage you to use the power you have to turn off computers, shut down networks if anyone's not getting their training on a regular basis. And I saw that our own office needs to dial up our percentage of participation in that. But that's some really good stuff.
I'll carry that back to him.
Thank you.
Governor, I would be very curious about learning more about what you're doing and where you're going. And I wonder if maybe the state procurement officer...
That's on the procurement front?
On the procurement, pull us together. But also the cybersecurity thing.
Sure.
There was just an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning about a breach in California last year and what it would mean to the electric grid. And when you stand back and think about what little thing could totally screw up all of America, I would like to learn more about what we're doing. I think Okay. Board one.
We'll schedule a time to get together then.
That would.
And I have a couple memos, Kevin, I can share with the Comptroller and the Treasurer.
Since if people start reading the newspaper, they're going to be interested in knowing what is being done here to,
absolutely.
To protect
and in fact,
them and the infrastructure.
And if you look at this strategic goal on Homeland Security, we have added another sub-goal within that, taking us from 12 to 13, and the 13th was the cybersecurity. We added that a few years back, and we have done drills and exercises that NEMA has organized for us on cyber threat, cybersecurity, running through scenarios, what would a department head do, what would an office agency head do, and those sorts of things. But they do very cool kind of spoon-fed, bite-sized I don't know if what you call them, exercise-lets, some very short, but regular things to keep the threat awareness up, because the main way that they attack networks is not by jumping into your mainframe with little paratroopers. It's to go through somebody in a that's logged on the wrong website.
And social engineering certainly is one of the biggest risks that we have. So the people tend to be the weak link, and how we can educate people to take the appropriate measures and to be able to identify things that are suspicious, so they don't, you know, in turn end up compromising things. That's what the cornerstone of having such a comprehensive security awareness training program.
Right, so the email that looks like it's from somebody friendly, then they tell you click on this, it's really cool inside, and then you're compromised. So we'll get you both those memos. All right, we spent too much time on this agenda item today. Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We
thank
now
you.
Move on. Thank you to the Department of Transportation. Yes?
Yes.
Secretary Smith.
Good morning, Governor, Treasurer, Comptroller. Secretary Smith representing MDOT. MDOT is presenting 26 items today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I don't believe we have any. Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And that concludes this Transportation Secretary's agenda. We now move to the Department of General Services. Sal?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Al Collins, Secretary of Department of General Services. We have 27 items on our agenda today. We are withdrawing item 22. We're glad to answer any questions on the remaining items.
Okay. Item 22 is withdrawn. Any other questions? Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. All right. We are now going back to revisit those items that we haven't handled before. So the first one we're going to tackle is on the Secretary's agenda. I'm sorry, is on the Department of Budget Management agenda. And that is item 1S, the Maryland Aviation Administration. We have representatives here from Unite here who would like to be heard here. So would the Unite here panel please come up? I also noticed they're assembling their panel. 122,927 of our neighbors are without power at this moment. Most of those power outages have occurred along a pretty nasty strip of ice across our northern border, the Mason-Dixon line, and crews are working to restore those. The culprit is, of course, heavy ice on limbs of trees and also on the lines themselves. If people are at home and watching this webcast, you might want to use this occasion to go on to our common platform for emergency management, which has been developed in recent years, which will show you real-time, up-to-date, power outages in the state down to the zip code level. That is something that did not exist before. It exists now, and I don't believe that it exists in any other state. You can find it by going on to MEMA, Google in MEMA, and OSPREY. That's the name of our common platform, OSPREY. We now have the representatives here from Unite here on item 1S, Maryland Aviation Administration.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
And all assembled. My name is Dr. Carlotta Allen, and I serve as a board member for Interfaith Worker Justice of Maryland, a coalition of labor and clergy working together to advocate for low-wage workers. I'm also pastor of Asbury United Methodist Church, located right here in Annapolis on West Street. And for those of you who may shelter in place during the session, you are invited to come worship with us at any time. Today, I'm here to speak in favor of item 1S for the hiring of 20 general laborers for the maintenance of Martin State and BWI Thurgood Marshall Airports. We welcome expanding employment opportunities at the airport, and I applaud the fact that one of the bids for this endeavor was rejected for not meeting the requirements of the Maryland Living Wage, so that employees of the state of Maryland are able to provide for themselves and their families. Unfortunately, many of the 700 food and retail workers at the airport still do not earn a living wage and cannot provide for themselves and their families. 40% of covered workers lack health care coverage, and 40% of covered workers receive their health care from Maryland's Medicare program. Median pay for concession workers at BWI is $8.50 an hour, and employees who work full-time, defined as 36 hours of work per week, earn an income of $15,912 annually, which, as we know, is well below the poverty line. The last time Interfaith Worker Justice stood before you, Governor O'Malley, you were presented with the voices of over 1,000 of your constituents who had signed boarding passes for justice, asking for improved working conditions and employment practices at state-owned BWI Thurgood Marshall Airport. Unfortunately, conditions at the airport for food and retail workers have remained unchanged. Today, I stand here with a sign-on letter signed by over 100 clergy, elected officials, and community organizations asking for the food and retail workers to have an opportunity to be able to earn a living wage and to be able to provide for themselves and their families through their employment at the state-owned BWI Thurgood Marshall Airport. I'd like to present this to you at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Pastor.
A few short weeks ago, and just 2 days ago, we heard you say, Governor, that we all do better when we're all doing better. Unfortunately, the food and retail workers at the BWI are not doing better. The last time representatives from Interfaith Worker Justice stood before you, you heard the story of Natalie Hickman, a McDonald's worker who was evicted from her home when she was 9 months pregnant because she could no longer afford to pay her rent. Today, Natalie is still struggling to pay rent despite working two jobs. Her home has no heat, and she and her infant daughter are currently heating their home using an oven. We also told you the story of Yassin Abdul Malik, a young man who stands beside me now, who holds two jobs at the airport.
Who is this?
Yassin.
Good to see you, Ms. Miller.
Abdul Malik, and you'll hear from him in just a moment. One at McDonald's and another at Potbelly's. He has been unable to afford an operation required to save his leg. He is still trying to save enough to afford to take the time to care for his health. We all do better when Natalie and Yassine do better, when the 700 food and retail workers at our state-owned BWI Thurgood Marshall Airport do better than your constituents across the state of Maryland do better. Fortunately, Governor, you have the power to make things better. The state of Maryland owns the airport and has a responsibility and a duty to ensure that there is equity at BWI. We are now working with legislators to introduce a bill that would provide the food and retail workers at BWI with the same wages and benefits as the lowest paid worker at the Maryland Aviation Administration. The Thurgood Marshall Equity Pay Act would end poverty employment and inequity at our state-owned airport. We hope that you will support the BWI food and retail workers and listen to the voices of your constituents that are working to ensure that BWI Thurgood Marshall Airport lives up to its namesake. I have spoken enough. I believe that it is even more important that you hear directly from Yassin Abdul Malik.
Good morning, Governor O'Malley, Treasurer Cox, and Comptroller Franchot. My name is Yassine Abdul-Malik. I'm a 28-year-old resident of Baltimore City. You know I work two jobs at Thurgood Marshall Airport, and I'm also a leader of United Here Local 7. I came here in Annapolis last July, 8 months ago, to speak to you, Governor O'Malley, about the state-owned airport. I'm returning here today on behalf of myself and my coworkers to ask, where have you been? Last July, I told you that I make $11.98 an hour at Potbellies and $7.80 an hour at McDonald's. I told you that these low-wage jobs means that I live paycheck to paycheck and it's a struggle to pay my bills. Over the past 8 months, my wages have stayed exactly the same with one change. My rent has gone up. This is the reality that me and my coworkers face. The cost of living is rising and our wages have not kept up. For many of us, this means working two jobs, applying for food stamps or other government assistance, or simply going without. Last July, I told you that I was facing a choice between my health and my finances. I told you that I had a painful ulcer on my leg and that I could not afford to take time off from two jobs for surgery. Today, 8 months later, nothing has changed. I have not had the surgery. I continue to work two jobs on my feet, and I still face the decision between addressing my deteriorating health and paying my bills. Last July, you stated firmly, and we believed you, that you would support what we are doing. We are now disappointed that in the last 8 months we have not seen any change, even though we knew that Governor Martin O'Malley had our back. It's just not enough for you to say that you understand the hardships that we are going through. It's not enough for you to fill our heads with some type of false hope that our leaders will be there with us when we are fighting to have good wages, benefits, and just be respected on our jobs. We ask that you stand with us in word and in action, not just because we are your constituency, but because we are human beings. Our struggle is a struggle for equality. We demand that all workers at the state-owned airport be paid at least the same minimum rate of pay as state workers. To achieve this, we have introduced the Thurgood Marshall Equal Pay Bill. The time for action is now. Because we look at you as a leader in the state of Maryland, we demand that you lead. Many of us at the airport are young people who are pursuing higher education, working hard, and trying to advance. We know you have aspirations for higher office, and we too have aspirations. We aspire to jobs with equality, respect, and fair wages that move us forward. No more false hope, no more empty promises, no more telling us what we want to hear without any action. We deserve to know now where our leaders stand in fighting for justice and protecting our welfare. We ask you now, Governor, will you support the Thurgood Marshall Equal Pay Bill, and will you sign it into law?
Thanks a lot. Anyone else you'd like to have step up and say whatever it is that's on their heart or on their mind? Okay, thank you all very much for coming. We now move on to the, Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, the ayes have it. And Mr. Malik, if you could, there's no reason you should go with that leg untreated. We can help you with that. Okay. And also, I want to thank Unite Here for their work in raising the minimum wage. That'll be a huge help at the airport and every place else. And also to the leaders of Unite Here, you know how very much involved, or you should know how very much involved Secretary John McDonough has been in attempting to mediate this. At your request, he has stepped back from that mediation. Not out of mine, not at his, but at the request of your leadership. And so we have. But we'll see you next quarter, and you're welcome here anytime. Anything else? On budget management? No? Okay. We move on now to the wetlands permit, item 12.
Is Mr. Ransom here? Okay. All right. I think Brad and I told him, there you are. And, Brad,
hey, Kevin,
assistant
go find
General.
Mr. Malik and give him your card, would you? There's no reason why he should not have that leg treated. I mean, there's no reason for it.
Reverend, can you see the microphone?
Yeah, the problem is if he takes the time off of work. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, there's no reason he should have that leg untreated. It doesn't make for a more persuasive argument here either, in case that's part of the motive, you know. Let's get his leg treated. Okay. All right.
Okay, so item 12 of the Secretary's agenda is a remand of a wetlands license that the board granted in March of 2013 to Timothy Beckwith. The opponents at the time of the board's meeting, when they granted the license, opponents opposed the license. The board granted the license, and those opponents went to Circuit Court in St. Mary's County. And St. Mary's Circuit Court did remand the case, the license, to the Board of Public Works, and Bradley Neitzel is going to explain the item that's in front of the board today. And then we have both Mr. Beckwith's attorney on behalf of the applicant and the opponent's attorney are here to speak on this license. So, Mr. Neitzel, you want to give a short summary of item 12?
Good morning. My name is Bradley J. Neitzel from the Office of the Attorney General. I represented the board in the circuit court litigation regarding this license application. On November 21st, 2013, based on a petition for judicial review filed by opponents of the license, the circuit court for St. Mary's County remanded the license application back to the board to address relevant factors and provide a basis for its decision. The Office of the Attorney General noted an appeal out of abundance of caution because the office disagreed with the court's finding that the board, in ruling on such an application, was acting in a quasi-judicial fashion. Nonetheless, the court ordered the item remanded back to the board, which is why it's here today. Although you may hear something different from Mr. Schaller, the lawyer for the opponents of the wetlands license, the mere noting of an appeal does nothing to affect the validity of the court order. The court order is still in effect, and in fact, the board would be compelled to follow that court order and could potentially be in contempt of court if it did not. And conversely, not doing what the court ordered is simply not a legal option here for the board. Again, merely noting an appeal does nothing to stay the circuit court's order, and that order has not been stayed, and so therefore the board is required to do what it is going to do today.
Okay. And our reasons for the decision are in the record here.
Yes, they are. 12 has the detailed findings of the board, if that's what the board would care to adopt after looking at the record. I don't know if you want to hear from the opponents, Mr. Shaler, and then perhaps the attorney for Mr. Beckwith.
So this is just a specific articulation of what was implicit before.
Exactly.
Okay. And members of the board, is there any change to any of those findings?
I have some questions after we hear from whoever else is speaking.
Okay.
Is Mr. Shaler?
Come on down, Ms. Shaler.
You're blocked. My vision was blocked by the 30s. There you go. All right, and you want to explain who you're here on behalf of?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Ms. McDonald.
Charles Shaler, on behalf of, shall we call them the opponents or the petitioners in this case, the Slaves, Mons, and Marshes. I am here to simply have this board address process. I don't disagree with what Mr. Neitzel has put forth. I do have a different legal interpretation as to whether this board actually has jurisdiction to hear the matter or not. Mr. Neitzel correctly advised the board that the state has taken an appeal. The matter sits with the Maryland Court of Special Appeals at this point. There was an order that was subsequently issued January 14th of this year, 2014, wherein the circuit court specifically clarified its prior ruling in November that Mr. Neitzel mentioned and specifically revoked the license. Now, the matter is here before the Board of Public Works. The issue and the subject matter that is before this board is now sitting in the Court of Special Appeals. Mr. Neitzel and I just simply disagree as to whether this board can hear it. So for the record, I just want to advise the board I disagree on that point. The other issue that I think this board needs to understand and what the Slavies have asked for is simply process in this case. What was presented to this board back when it originally approved the license were the Slaby's, the petitioner's concerns that process had not been followed in this case. And in an effort to provide brevity, because you do have a longer day in front of you, I want to present the board with simply our memorandum that there are three copies that identified the errors that the petitioners believe where the process and including the underlying merits were not followed. So I want to just move that forward. The other issue is that it appears that the board has predetermined this matter by having findings already as part of the record without having gone through a review process. And so we take issue with that. One of the more concerning matters is that, as I mentioned, the January 14th, 2014 order by the Circuit Court Judge Karen Abrams revoked the license. As a revoked license, this board can't reinstate the license. Your own regulations, 23.02.04.18, capital E as in Edward, states, and I will quote, an expired license or a license revoked for other than failure to execute the license may not be reinstated, extended, or transferred, but requires reapplication under Regulation 04E of this chapter. 04E references back to the application for a license shall be filed in accordance with COMAR 2624 with the support of information prescribed by the department. So what you have here is a situation where even if this board wanted to reinstate the license as it appears that it is predetermined to do so, it can't do so as a matter of law. Your own regulations say you can't do that. So as a result of that, the safe course for this board, should it choose to try to take some action, would push it through the process. And that's all the Slaby's, Marshes, and Munns have ever asked in this case. And I won't go into whether we believe there's erosion or not. We don't believe there's erosion justifying it. We believe there's some hazards to navigation. But those are all issues that the Department of Environment was required to look at, didn't look at sufficiently in our mind. The MDE original R&R never referenced the statutory factors as set forth in 16202G. Neither did the administrator's report reference the factors. And as a result of that, there is a flawed process here. And we respectfully ask the board to, at a minimum, deny the license. At a very minimum, send it back through the process. It's unfortunate that Mr. Beckwith chose to proceed at his own risk. He built these structures out there. That is unfortunate. I believe there's one groin that's left, but that's the risk he took. Thank you very much, unless there are questions. Thank you.
Yes, I'm not sure whether it's you, Mr. Shaler, or the AG. What caught my attention in this was the action by the court in explicitly revoking the license that was granted by the Board of Public Works. And my question, I guess, at the outset is, if the court had concerns about an articulation of the basis for our decision to grant a state title wetlands license, I'm quoting from the decision, why didn't the court just accept a letter from the Board of Public Works saying, this is our decision, here's the explanation and the basis for it, and obviously send him or her a copy of the background materials? Why doesn't that suffice?
I'm not sure what letter you're referring to.
In the decision, the court said that they're sending back, well, at least according to my background materials, we're supposed to articulate the basis for our decision to grant a state title wetlands license to Timothy Beckwith, something that I supported. So it's really a mechanical question. Why is this item even before us? And I guess from Mr. Shaler, it's because the judge and her, is it a, her?
Yes.
In her wisdom, chose to explicitly revoke the license that we granted. And that apparently the basis is that we didn't explain our decision well enough and use the points in the background materials, which I remember from the deliberation, were relatively extensive. So what's the problem that the court has? Why don't we just send them a letter saying, all due respect, here's how we... Apparently there's some confusion there as to whether or not our background materials, what they were that were used.
I think what the court was looking for was explicit application of certain factors and connecting the factors to actual evidence before the board. If you look at the memorandum opinion from the court, and that's what this item today does. I don't think anything other than that would be sufficient.
Oh, okay. Well,
and in terms of the explicit revocation, that actually, in my opinion, was not even necessary, because any time a circuit court remands something back to an administrative agency, the remand itself is a revocation of what the agency did.
But my understanding is that the court is interested in this board explaining its basis. Why is it in effect we have to go back and revisit?
Because I believe that's what the court ordered in its memorandum and opinion.
Okay. Could you maybe summarize the factors that this board is to consider when making the decision now, as opposed to the factors that we considered before?
Well,
I don't have the transcript in front of me, but I believe it's quite extensive.
I don't think so. I think what the court decided was that the first time the board was not actually explicit about what factors it was applying.
Oh.
And was not explicit about how it connected to any evidence. It was our argument to the court that wasn't necessary because the board acts in a quasi-legislative fashion, but in the end, because the court disagreed and believed the board was acting quasi-judicial fashion, that it has to be more explicit. And that's why the court sent it back the way it did.
Okay. But you have appealed the decision, I take it.
That's correct.
Okay. I would certainly hope so, because it strikes me that this is an effort, well-intentioned but misguided, to chip away at the decision-making prerogatives of the Board of Public Works, and in so doing erode the authority of this body by relegating it to a mere administrative body. Am I wrong?
I agree. That's what our office actually argued in the Hovnanian opinion from several years ago as well, and that's something actually still has not been decided explicitly by the Court of Appeals, but I'm sure it eventually will be.
Okay. If the ruling by the St. Mary's Circuit Court were allowed to stand and thus become legal precedent, how would it affect the process by which this board considers future requests for tidal wetlands licenses?
Well, as it stands now, obviously, this court's order has no authority other than actually, even before that judge, even other judges in St. Mary's County could go a different way. But obviously, if it became precedent in a reported opinion, then every single county in the state would have to do what this judge did. And that's something that certainly our office is opposing.
Okay. And just a question on Mr. Shaler's point. If we're repealed, why act on this matter now? Why not simply allow the appeals process to run its course?
Well, I think the decision was that it was better for the board to just simply resolve this matter and do what it wanted to do the first time.
The decision by whom?
I think the decision by the staff of the board. I met with the staff, and it was a decision based on their decision and based on what the Attorney General, its legal advice. So it's our position that this has gone on long enough. The board did what it did properly the first time, and it should just be resolved.
Okay. Well, let me... The project is 95% complete?
I haven't heard the 95. I've heard mostly complete is what I've been told.
Okay. Well, for the benefit of my colleagues, who I have great respect for, here would be my response to that if, you know, there was a second vote. Brief letter to the Honorable Circuit Court Judge of St. Mary's County, and it would state in capital letters, Your Honor, comma, you are out of order, period. Sincerely, Board of Public Works. Now, we based our decision, and I remember this very clearly, on the supporting documents, and we also based it on the Constitution of the State of Maryland and the statutes that authorize this Board of Public Works. And I draw the line when one branch of government intrudes on another. In all due respect, I don't work for the circuit court judge of St. Mary's County. I work for the taxpayers. And this is a major problem. So maybe I'll have to send it by myself, but I'm happy to do that because this is not right. And I voted for Mr. Beckwith, but I'm going to vote against it unless if we have to be pushed to a vote. I don't think we need to. I don't think it should be an item. I think we should let the process, the appeals, move forward. I remember when the governor came down famously to the Maryland legislature and talked to us about the way the court system as mayor worked up there in Baltimore City. And I couldn't have been prouder of it because this does not pass the common sense test. Thank you. Sorry for articulating my concern, but
all right. We've all reviewed the this matter, and we have reviewed and agree with the and have no amendments to the finding and the rationale contained in the record for the judge to be able to review. Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the comptroller. All in favor?
No, I do not second.
Oh, you don't
I
second?
I oppose this because this is a significant precedent-setting vote that is unnecessary. It chips away at the authority of the Board of Public Works. It is an overreach by the Circuit Court of St. Mary's County. It would turn this board into an administrative body that simply rubber stamps whatever decision comes up. And furthermore, it would bog us down in unbelievable litigation on the granting of these licenses because obviously lawyers would have the right to have full evidentiary hearings on these matters ad nauseum. And I resent a sister branch of government intruding into something where they have no gosh darn business. And this is wrong. And I don't mean to get hot under the collar, but, we are not part of the judiciary.
Okay.
Excuse me. For
That's okay.
And I didn't mean to bring up the court system in Baltimore that you so brilliantly showed me out in the corridor many years ago how screwed up it was. This is an overreach. Well-intentioned. Don't mean any disrespect. And I know I voted for this a couple of weeks ago or whenever it came up before us. I'm voting against it now out of protest that this is completely unnecessary and will lead us into a thicket that we will later regret.
Do you want to vote against or you want to abstain?
Well, I'm voting against any action by this board that would at all validate this particular request. It's already, we've already done far too much, and a letter, if you want to make it a longer letter than the one I mentioned, feel free, but that's all that's necessary here. And let the process, I opposed Mr. Scherler before, I think he's got a good point, which is let the process work.
Hi, you're approaching the podium. And
I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt. My name is Mark Gabler. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Beckwith, and if I may have a minute or two
to
speak, I'd certainly appreciate it. Mr. Comptroller, I certainly agree with your vehement disagreement with the judge's decision, and I also believe that she was wrong in her decision.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a fight now between Mr. Shaler's clients and the Board of Public Works as to whether or not the action taken is quasi-legislative or quasi-judicial. I agree with your viewpoint on that, but what I'm trying not to do and what I would prefer not to do is have Mr. Beckwith be caught up in the middle of that. He was issued a license. I believe that the decision that this board made back in March was proper, was correct, and was supported by more than an adequate record and adequate findings. I understand where you're coming from. I don't see the harm in reissuing and acting on the remand, explaining with more clarity and detail additional findings for the decision that was made so that Mr. Beckwith can go forth and complete his improvements. And I would add to that that there was an attempt to stay the process, as you mentioned. There was no appeal filed of the county building permit. So when this board issued the license and then the county followed with this building permit issuance, that was not appealed by Mr. Shaler's clients, which would have acted as an automatic stay of the construction. So I would implore you to allow Mr. Beckwith to go forth and complete the work that is contemplated under the license. It is 90 to 95%. I don't know the exact percentage, but we've submitted photographs, and Mr. Beckwith is here, and he'd be happy to explain to you and show you the nature of those improvements and how much has been done and how much is left to do. And I would certainly prefer that he be able to complete that and that this matter then go forth and the other issue can be decided. And I personally don't think, as Mr. Neitzel said, that following what the court said on remand, despite your disagreement with that, creates any kind of binding precedent as to future matters. And that if you comply and you issue your clarified findings based on what's put forth in the agenda, that would allow Mr. Beckwith to complete and not get caught up in this battle between these two departments. So we think that the record was adequate previously, and we'd like to see you go forth and reissue the license.
Well, I appreciate your point of view. Probably you have two votes to support it. I, Mr. Beckwith, wherever he is, I think you're entirely valid in your project. I voted for it. But the state of Maryland will continue, if my view were to prevail, the state would still have your back because we'd be fighting for your issue at the higher courts. And I just hope you understand that my voting against this, however inconvenient it might be if I had a second vote, is not to mean that we don't support you. I stand behind my earlier support of this, but this is an outrageous action. I mean, this is really, you can say it's not precedent setting, but I assume that future wetlands permits will be, there'll be long meetings, that's for sure, because everybody's going to want to have each of these criteria debated back and forth with all the information. And if we say, oh, no, we're sick and tired of hearing these things, they'll say, okay, we'll see you on that. This is not right. And so thank you for being here. Go move. How much of the project's finished?
Everything is complete for the exception of one jetty. All of the structures have been inspected by the complete Department of Environment, including Mr. Gary Setzer, as well as compliance. And
anyway, I made my point. Thank you for your input.
Okay. Treasurer moves approval.
I would move approval. As I understand it, we are articulating what was implicit before, the basis for our decision. I don't find that I think that's a good thing to do. Marbury v. Madison was fought a long time ago. I move adoption.
Okay. Treasurer moves adoption, seconded by the governor. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed?
No.
Controller votes no. In protest for all the reasons formerly stated.
Thank you.
Previously stated.
Yes.
Thank you.
Although I thought you were pretty formal as well. Okay, that concludes all but the school matters. So we're going to do a change of set here, and we will be back with the school matters.